Welcome to this episode of Super Yacht Laundry Podcast. Thank you for joining me today. I am with the gorgeous Gemma Holbert. How are you today, darling?
I'm good. I'm roasting, which is such a joy because it's not often in the UK. So I am so good.
It has been really good. We've had, you know, compared to last summer, this is a good one. You know, standard. Obviously, the press are like, we're all doomed and we're going to die.
So, I delete all those apps off my phone. I don't need that negativity in my life at all.
We're all going to die. The land's going to die. It's like, can't they just be happy? Like, you know, we're not having to wear rain masks. We had to wear raincoats all last summer, but this summer we don't have to take it out so much. So let's just embrace it. But no. We're not happy either. But it's fun. So you've moved over to the UK. You've got a fixed abode now as well. Yeah. Settling in nicely.
Love it. Yeah. We live in the countryside and like out my bedroom window, I can see the leek fields. and it's beautiful. Since moving here, I've actually felt my nervous system completely reset. I just feel in my body. I'm like, for the first time in well over a decade. So very, very grateful.
Well, when we first got to know each other, you were in a flat in
Lymington. Yeah.
Lymington. And your stuff didn't really fit in it, did it? to be honest with you. It was stressful in itself.
Yeah, it was just a bit of a bigger crew cabin, essentially. My kitchen living room was also my office, was also our dining room. It was tiny. It served a purpose for the time, but yeah, no, I was struggling mentally at that time. And so whenever I think back to that apartment, I'm like, oh God, just.
Well, you're obviously the generation born out of lockdown and kind of, you know, the entrepreneur born in that kind of boiling point moment. And obviously, yeah, we'll talk about the stress of your office, your dining room and your kitchen all kind of being in one room. But we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
Obviously, all of our regular listeners will know that we have to start at the beginning.
Yeah.
So if we go back to the mists of time, what was Gemma doing before she even decided to get on a super yacht?
Oh, boy. I joined yachting at 18, so I was young.
I was on the young
side for sure. I was at the Art Institute of Vancouver, so I grew up in Vancouver, Canada. And I was studying event management and hospitality. At the time, I was already, I mean, it's wild because looking back now, I mean, I'm married. I would never, ever trust a 16-year-old to like be my day of coordinator for my wedding, but that was my life. So I started doing large events, day of coordinating for weddings when I was 16. So I guess I would have been grade 11 and then grade 12. Continued that, finished high school a year early, not because I'm off the charts intelligent, simply because I grew up in the UK, then moved over and we start school a year earlier. So I was already kind of a year ahead, which was awesome. So I did my year of university, I guess, at the Art Institute, which I loved, and then started realizing I can't afford to pay my student loans. I can't afford to move out, but I really need to move out. You know, I think you do get to that point in life where your parents and you just do need that separation. And that was a bit for my relationship with them anyways, was moving away because now we are really close. But I was like, I do not know what on earth I'm going to do. This is very overwhelming. And one of the girls in my class, she had just done 7 years at sea and she was in the class because she wanted to go into more large scale events in the winery industry in the Okanagan in Canada. And she was like, why don't you join a boat? And I mean, 18-year-old me was like, yeah, great. So I let that day, literally, I hadn't even Googled anything to do with this.
What?
No, nothing. I went home. She had just shared a couple stories over the year in class. And then that day when she said to me, you should just do it, I went home to my mom and dad and was like, I think I'm going to do this boat thing. word for word what I said. I didn't even know the terminology at the time.
The boat thing.
The boat thing. And I was a late bloomer, so I'd just gotten my first boyfriend, but like it was absolutely going nowhere. And I did not know what to do of like how to get out of that. I was like, oh no. I was very much raised that you date once and then you get married. So I was in this conundrum of,
wow, that's dangerous. Like, yeah. If that was the case, like thinking back who I'd ended up with, that would not work. Not work.
No, I would, like, no offense to this person, but hate my life. So anyways, I was like, this is perfect. I can just move. And I wrote my final exam. It was an intense year too. We did 20 courses in 1 year. So you had 4 semesters in your year. So it was really intense. Wow. Wrote my final exam. My best friend who I met on the course, she decided to do it with me. And we flew to Florida to do our SCCW 2 days after. So we didn't even walk across the stage and get our diploma. That got posted to me. We were already, yeah.
It's weird to think, you know, it is, you know, however many obviously ladies I speak to, it's one conversation. One, not even sometimes a proper conversation, you know, that one chance meeting, chance conversation, it gets dropped in, and then it's weird how like their brain, like your brain's just latch onto it, like, yes,
yeah, this makes
sense. Like a calling, and then everybody goes into like autopilot, like, mm-hmm. Right, okay, that's, I feel, for like, sure. We're chosen.
And it's funny because the way it was kind of portrayed to me and the way I probably portrayed it in my head was, I'm basically going to be a wedding planner at sea. That's kind of what I anticipated of like, great, I'm going to join yachting. I'm going to just plan all these events every day. It'll be awesome. Never in my wildest dreams did I imagine like the stuff, literal stuff, I would have to start cleaning up. And, you know, it's just, I think when you're that young, you hear what you want to hear. What I wanted to hear was, I get to be a wedding planner on a super yacht, travel the world, pay off my debt, and leave Vancouver. So, I mean, yes, in a way that happened, but also I had no idea. And I wish that I had the foresight to be a lot more prepared. But also, this was pre-Instagram. This was 2011. Mm. It was a long time ago now. So a lot of the Facebook groups didn't exist. There wasn't a lot of information online. So it was all word of mouth, which I feel ages me a little. But anyway,
yeah, but I think it makes it more, I don't know, it's more adventurous though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, it was so, I remember doing research after the person had mentioned it to me, and Sarah Duncan's guide was possibly the only thing you could find out there. Yeah. Like her stewing guide. There was nothing. There was a few little bits. The crew grapevine had opened in Antibes, so they had a bit on their website and basically said, come here and we'll look after you. I'm like, yes. Obviously, there's more information about the SCCW, but it was kind of all very vague. Yeah. So either we're all really irresponsible young people.
Yeah.
It was like, there was no information. We're like, yeah, sounds all right. We'll go.
And then I went to Florida and my crew house was basically a frat house. So I had this university experience that I'd never had because I was living at home the whole time I was at school. And all of a sudden I'm in this house with 18 people and the girls' room, there was only 5 of us. So there was just dudes running around everywhere. At one point I woke up and there was like this, they brought their scooter, you know, like the moped, like into our room just for fun and like 2 a.m. And I just, at one point I did think like, what in the hell am I doing? This is just so not who I am as an individual, but you do have, I just rode the wave of like, well, okay. You know, I might be the only one waking up at 8 a.m. every day for, you know, interviews, but at least I'll try. I don't know. I just, yeah, had no clue.
It's an adventure. It's the start of the adventure. So how long did it take you to get on board?
4 weeks.
4 weeks. Mm-hmm. What did you get on? Big, small?
Oh, gosh. It was a 45-meter.
So nice. And,
yeah. But then I joined. They interviewed me not on board. I think – I can't quite remember where I met them. But anyways, I did a couple interviews and then got on board and realized there's no walls. the whole vessel had been gutted. It was in the middle of this shipyard where they were building the interior. But they're like, so this will be the main salon. And it, all it was like a hull with like decks. So I knew like, oh, okay, there's going to be like three stories of interior space. But like, I didn't, it was mad. And this was, oh my gosh, 2 months before Christmas. And the boss wanted to do a Christmas trip. Like, what? So then like 3 weeks before Christmas, they had to charter out this small kind of 110-foot vessel that hadn't been touched in 3 years. So we found like mouse droppings on board. There were definitely mice in the overhead. No one had touched a dishwasher. So like opening the dishwasher. And then we did the guest trip. We had an all crew meeting after the trip. Keeping in mind, I was so grossly seasick. And that was when I realized this is going to be a really tough ride for me because I never got over that. And the captain fired me in front of the whole crew. And he's like, we've just come to realize that we probably don't have enough work for you. I mean, the boat's not really quite finished yet. And I was like, well, I mean, there's no walls, but you kind of knew this when you hired me. And that was my first boat.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. That made me feel better because I got fired from my first boat. So that makes me feel loads better.
Yeah. it wasn't awesome. I did not do that well.
If you've got no walls, they're kind of getting a bit ahead of themselves anyway. You know, there's not really much for an interior person to do during that.
No, no.
So it didn't put you off?
No, which shocking. It didn't. And instead, I just thought I need to mount something probably a little bit bigger because that 110 foot was very, I mean, our washing machine and dryer was in the engine room. And I just thought to myself, if I'm going to learn how to do this, I just feel like I need to have a bit more of a structured team around me where I can learn more. Because at that point, I had never done an ironing before in my life. And suddenly I'm on this guest trip in the Bahamas thinking, I don't even know how to turn this thing on. You know, that's the level I was at when I started. So I then joined a 50 meter actually in Cuba. And back then you couldn't fly to Cuba from the US. So I had to get my parents to help me organize flying to the Bahamas so then I could get on a flight, blah, blah, blah. And then, yeah, then I joined a 50 meter from there.
You were flying to Cuba. It's mad though, isn't it? Like you think about it, like if you, you know, obviously having a daughter now, my daughter's ringing me up. It's like, I can't fly direct to Cuba, but I'm going to go this way. I'm like, yeah. But it's kind of the stuff that I would do.
I can't wait to see Esme grow up and just see the adventure she goes on.
I don't know. I like to think that I'm going to be a supportive mum and I'll try and make her as savvy as possible. One hopes, but you know, you're young once to kind of make mistakes. Unfortunately. So you get onto a proper boat. Mm-hmm. You know, first impressions, you know, your first 6 months, like what kind of can you remember from that time?
I mean, I don't think I started off great. I fainted in the crew meeting on my very first day. So that wasn't awesome. I think I was just so anxious and overwhelmed. I just head planted straight onto the crew mess table. And this is not how you start.
I'm sorry to laugh, but like, look, it's one of those moments where you hear a story, you can actually picture yourself sat at the table.
Yeah, suddenly my like mouth got all dry and my tongue swelled and I just looked around and I was like, and I couldn't get words out and then boom, hit head on the table. But obviously it wasn't that bad because that captain is now one of my clients. So that's all right. I left a laughing impression, I suppose. But yes, no, I was on there. I only ended up doing 3 months on there. I actually found the boat was based in Mexico. It was only 2 days a week that the crew would go out because we were an hour away from Cancun in the marina, but 2 nights a week we would go out. And I, to be honest, I just partied quite a bit and I've never been that type of person. Like whenever we go out, you always have to not push me, but it's very rare that I drink. I'm just not, it's not, you know, innately who I am. And I just, at the end of that 3 months, just was like, this isn't true to myself. I'm learning so much. This boat is so great for learning, but I just feel like this isn't a good environment for me. So I left, and it's crazy because I think crew are so scared about leaving, right? Mm-hmm. For longevity. And I wasn't in a bad position. It was absolutely my decision making of going out with the crew. But that is what, as a crew, everybody did collectively together. There weren't alternative options. And I think when you're that young, and I was super impressionable, I just kind of followed the crowd. So I quit and was so anxious because, you know, my longevity at that point was not good. I had been in the industry for a season and already been on two boats, fired from one, no walls, not really my fault. And then I left a second. But then I was so, so lucky. I joined after that another vessel that was so much more of a family environment. The chief stew, like, her daughter was my flower girl at my wedding, and it was just beautiful. And we still had fun, but just on a much more wholesome scale. And I think that's where I really started to find my feet. I had a lot more just responsibility and, like, just the best joyful time. It was awesome.
It's tricky good. When you're that young, you know, and you do want to fit in and you do want to get on with everybody else. But obviously, like you said, if they're doing their way to, you know, decompress doesn't really kind of fit with what you would naturally do, you end up kind of wanting to do it because you don't want to isolate yourself, I suppose.
For sure.
You know, but if you're not into it, I used to get that, like leaving early, like everybody was like, yeah, we'll keep going. I'm like, no, I want to go to, you know, I'm not a night. I've not been very good at being a night bird anyway. I get really anxious.
Yeah.
Especially, if it's like 3 o'clock in the morning, like, what are we doing? You know, roaming around the streets.
Yeah.
It's good that you recognize that in yourself so young, because some would keep going, like you said, because they don't want to lose the job. They just keep going and kind of following the herd. And that can be quite damaging long term.
For sure. For sure.
I mean, obviously, you know, you see it on the other side now from recruitment side, because that's another arm of your business. What would you say to an individual that, you know, if somebody rocked up with your experience and they're like, I want to leave this boat because it's just no good for me, what would you say to them?
I think if you innately know in yourself that it is not serving you in a way that's productive to your growth as an individual, also as someone with a career on board, then absolutely walk away. There's just so much pressure on longevity. And I appreciate that, you know, boats don't want to put in time, money, and effort into training someone that's just going to leave. But ultimately, surely it's better to look at a crew member and go, they know what works for them and they know what doesn't. Therefore, they're only now going to accept a role that is going to work for them because their core values, they're now so much more aware of them that they need a vessel that aligns with that. Mm. So I think that's why it's so important when you are looking, like, be transparent. The amount of times you hear, I think, from recruitment of, oh, I just want a career progression. That's great. But what does that mean to you?
Mm.
Because
I just want to survive.
And if it's a matter of, like, this isn't a really healthy environment for me, okay, well, what is? Because then we'll work our butts off to try and make sure that we're finding you and putting you forward to vessels where you're going to find what is going to work for you. But, like, you just have to be honest with yourself. And I was with the agents. I just said, I appreciate that my age is working against me here because I'm still at this point. I just turned 19. I don't have great longevity, but I really, really would like to find a boat where it is more of a family atmosphere. It is less of a clubbing, partying, because the crew were all, you know, kind of mid, late 20s. So they were having the time of their lives. I was just little old Gemma, you know, I needed a bit more, I don't know, I think nurturing is probably what I needed.
Also, when boats, you know, we've all worked on a wild boat, it can be pretty wild, you know. Yeah. And sometimes the wild boats, it's kind of the beginning of the end.
For sure.
You know what I mean? You know, everybody's partying loads. A few probably they've not told anybody, but a few crew members are like, I'm leaving, so I don't care, kind of thing. Yeah. They go hard out. And then also that's when the chain of command kind of starts to break down a little bit as well. So it's kind of like a final swan song, I think they call it. But it can be quite intense.
For sure.
Because boats are a great place to party, I suppose. You go to these cool places, temptation everywhere.
I mean, 18-year-old me was living her best life, spring break in Cancun. But my heart and soul was not.
I was also, you can't do it forever.
No.
So obviously, after being on board a lot, what were your likes and dislikes? What did you love about being on board and what wasn't great?
I mean, I loved being a chief stew. And while I love my job now, I am not sure I'll ever find something that I love more potentially than that. I do wish now that I had started yachting later because I've learned so much more about life. I look back at some of the decisions I made and I cringe of like, what in the heck was I thinking? But I absolutely, I loved consistently pushing myself to meet the expectations as the expectations were always growing, to challenge myself, to show up, to be better, to incorporate creativity into more of the admin side of things, to make things more fun, to encourage my team to take pride in their work and to view everything of like, what a joy, because look outside, this is what we get to do today. And that's what we get to do after is go for this swim and just encourage that, that happy atmosphere. I mean, I've talked about this a lot in therapy. I am a people pleaser to my core. I've really tried to work on that the last few years since leaving yachting. So for like the chronic people pleaser, the chronic perfectionist, it's the dream role. And I just loved it. I loved being on service, but I also loved housekeeping. I loved going into a cabin and saying, you know, to the girls, okay, right, let's time ourselves. We're going to see how quick we can make this bed ready, steady, go. And then you make the bed and then you're giggling or you're like, ooh, you know, I've just ordered this new bathing suit online for our next day off. And I loved the sisterhood of it as well. Mm-hmm. I'm one of three sisters. I've grown up with women around me my whole life. So to have the opportunity to then, be surrounded by these incredible women was just the most beautiful experience. I loved it. I truly, it was the best.
The people pleasing. It's weird how you get satisfaction, you know, when your team pulls off, you know, a last minute party or, you know, just awkward juggling of different things and all sorts of things. You end up getting so much satisfaction. I mean, making stuff look nice and tidy, you know. I now constantly feel disappointed when I look around my house because it doesn't look the same.
Then you're not seeing my desk.
Honestly, I've got Esme's like having like a little mini. Well, it was supposed to be a play date. It's turned into like a barbecue of like 15 kids. It's got a little bit crazy, and I'm just looking around at how much I've got to do before tomorrow. I'm like, where are my girls? I need my team of three to just walk in right now.
Housekeeping and service immediately.
You know, I need somebody to do the drinks and I've got to sort the food out. And oh my God, I need a chef. It's the peak of hospitality. But it's the fun, like you said, it's nice for you to say the fun.
Yeah.
Because you can have such a laugh doing it. And the banter, I do think, you know, when you, one of the parts of being on your favorite boat is when, you know, the crew is fairly stable. And then when it's all fairly stable and everyone kind of knows each other, the banter just goes, it's just so funny. You're working the hardest that you've ever probably worked, but you don't care because you're just having a laugh, stitching each other up. Do you know what I mean?
For sure. I totally agree.
That's where the real bond comes from, you know, those seasons where it all just worked.
Yeah.
And you had that nice balance of, you know, laughter, work, and getting to see stuff and, you know.
Totally. I actually listened to a podcast by Laurie, who spoke at one of your events in Antibes. And it's either 60 or 40, I can't remember, but it the study was saying that in adults, you have to spend 60 hours with an individual to build a foundation for a friendship, which is why I think as adults, it's quite challenging because who has 60 hours to dedicate to getting to know someone to then determine if they want to be close friends? But on board, like, you're there within the first week on board, you know? So I do think people underestimate the bonds that you build, even for people that are so, so different and maybe in real life wouldn't necessarily gravitate towards each other. You have such a commonality, and what you go through is something that no one can relate to because it is so unique to that one specific vessel. Obviously, as yacht crew, we can all relate to each other, but every vessel, every owner, every captain runs things so uniquely that you do bond, and that 60 hours is like, you blink and you're best friends.
No, that's actually, I've never heard that before. That's really interesting. Because obviously with, you know, what we talk about on here, a lot of the, what women struggle with is making friends on land.
Yeah.
If you're trying to harvest 60 hours with someone, you know, like at a mum group or a workout class or whatever, that's going to be hard going. That could take a year to do that.
Yeah.
With a bit of luck, trying to get into the right place at the right time. Wow, that's quite interesting.
Yeah.
So then, that you like you said, that makes it completely obvious that, you know, crew becomes so. And also, you might not see like different crew members that you've worked with, but when you do get back together, that's why you feel like you're friends, because you are. You know, you were friends. You know each other in that, I suppose, undescribed way of being a friend and being so close quarters. That's quite interesting. You taught me something new today. I like that. I like that a lot. So when for you did it start feeling uncomfortable, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I always had said, I will continue doing this until the day I wake up and it feels like a job. Because you are giving up so much of your life that if it felt like a job, I can get another job. But I can't get another life. And because I was committing my life to it, that was kind of my non-negotiable. And it was, 2020. And it's such a shame because that was the best boat I ever worked on. I had by far the most loving, caring, wonderful group of women on board with me. They were just phenomenal. The crew itself was amazing. I adored the owners that we worked for. But it was just really unhealthy for me. I came to realize, A, I was completely addicted to my job, but to the point where it was unhealthy. Like, I would sleep with the work phone in my bed in case someone needed to text me in the middle of the night. So it was, you know, that in itself is not great to have a phone on loud next to you because I was so wrapped up in this anxiety of that. And then I know you've talked about it on the podcast. Obviously, I was really, really close friends with our head of house. She was one of my best friends, Jem. She unfortunately got diagnosed with the cancer in the February. Lockdown kind of happened in the March. In the April, we had guests moved on board during COVID. They basically locked down on board with us. So I was able to get some leave to take her to start some of her treatment and then came back on board. And unfortunately, like so many other vessels, the crew numbers were just being shrunk. So we went from a team of 8 to a team of 3. Jem had to leave the vessel because the boat was then starting to move and we obviously couldn't go to sea with her because just with everything going on medically. And I was just finding like little pieces of me just felt broken. You know, like
thin. That's a lot of different, you know, a lot of different things all going on at the same time. I mean, COVID was crap anyway.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Then to add trying to work remotely and all of those different things. And also there was a lot of, you know, getting locked out of your country if you didn't go back.
Mm.
You know, there was a lot of stuff that was just making everything really, really complicated.
Yeah.
And also getting support during that time was uber complicated.
Yeah.
So you stepped off because obviously you did you come to the UK then? Or were you?
Yeah, I did. So I ended up resigning in the July. My team actually very kind were like, what is it gonna take for you to leave? Because we can see that you're struggling. And I was really close with these girls. They're still really, really good friends. And I just said, like, I'm not going to leave you guys. And so they both resigned that day. And then I resigned the next day. So, and it was unfortunate because I think to the owners, it looked terrible, but it was nothing to do with them. It was the fact that at the same time, my grandfather was also battling cancer, and him and I were incredibly close. So I had these two people that I know just needed, I needed to love on them that were in England. And I was waking up in the morning so drained. And I'd never felt that. Like, yachting gave me such a natural high every day. I was like running off of this energy and all this. I had none. I was so depleted. And I was also doing therapy. So I would like do therapy for an hour, like cry my eyes out, have a shower, and then go and serve the guest dinner. Not healthy, you know, because we weren't allowed off the boat. Anyway, so 4 or 5 months of, I guess 4 months of that. And then I resigned, flew to the UK, because Canada, you had to isolate. I think it was like 2 or 3 weeks, whereas in the UK, seafarers didn't. So we could still go and like self-isolate, but still be able to at least go for a walk and just get some fresh air and stuff. So yeah, decided at that point that England made the most sense. So,
like, so with all of these things, you know, like it's a whole storm of different things. Where did the academy come from? Where was there? Was there any brain power to go on to do? Because at the same time, that was also in the mix.
Yeah, for sure. So at that point in time, while I'm doing like dealing with all that, I was also running the Yacht Stew, which I started in 2016. And I had the Yacht Stew podcast. So I was recording podcast episodes after guests went to bed from my cabin, like in the closet, because as you know, noise can be quite challenging on podcasts. So wow. I was trying to do that. And I always knew I wanted to go into training. My dad was like, you need to start the Yacht Stew Academy. And I was like, that is such a gross name. It's so many words. It's so many letters. No one's going to want it. That's not the thing. My parents really wanted me to do it, obviously in Canada, so I was close to them. And I just kept saying, I just don't feel like that's the right place for it. And with kind of the Yacht Stew building, I was able to share a lot more of like the training we were doing on board, like whether it was an afternoon tea afternoon where I was teaching the team about tea service, you know, the difference of cream tea, high tea, afternoon tea, all those different things, to mixology training, to housekeeping training, all these things I was just openly sharing about my day-to-day life on board, which is hilarious because now I'm quite a private person. But on back on board, I was like, here's everything you need to know about my life served on a platter, down to like color socks I was wearing kind of thing. And when I left yachting, I left because I was so broken and so burnt out that I decided to just jump back in and immediately go straight into building a business literally like 3 days after I left. And then a few months later, I seriously burnt out.
Well, because like enter stage left, we ended up talking to each other. So in this whole madness, because obviously, you know, basically I tried to invite you to a lunch and it was the start of my journey slash also the start, I suppose, you know, our relationship began to develop at that point. You know, we'd spoken a few times because I, you know, was starting Pearls and just obviously, again, coming out of lockdown, like loads of women were isolated, and it also highlighted, you know, how hard, you know, you come out of yachting, you're isolated anyway, but coming into a world where you can't socialize with anybody, it makes it like everything was amplified. And I just remember speaking, considering how much was going on in your life at the time, I just always remember how kind of like, you know, positive you were. About, and to be fair, it was about an event. You're just like, let's do an event. Because obviously you couldn't come to my first one, but then we went on to do like the Shard and stuff like that. But I think that's where we probably aligned with the tuning into that, the female connection, the female, you know, the team, that what we, you know, what we didn't want to let go of is that that team feeling and working with a group of women and, you know, making things happen. So we were quite akin to that. I mean, we've known each other ages now.
I know, I've been through it. Quite a few things, yeah. I think for me, it was very eye-opening. Obviously, leaving yachting at that point was not my plan. I know people harp on have a plan. Great. If you are an individual that likes to plan ahead and that's what you need to make decisions, awesome. I, at the point, acted on emotion 100%. My only plan was like, I love to teach. I love stews. I just want to love on the community. And I needed to connect those dots. But leaving and knowing no one really in England, except my husband's family, and then isolating essentially with my in-laws for like the first year and a half really made me realize how deeply, like in my soul, I needed that sisterhood that I had on board in my everyday. I think women, friends, female connection, you can't bottle that stuff up. You can't, there's not a way to describe it. And when I was speaking to you, I remember we just kept saying how lonely it is, but like, this is insane because there are so many other women that literally could be within an hour of you globally that are feeling the exact same way, that have the same kind of background of working at sea. And yet here we all are.
Yeah. I'm still trying to work out how to manage all of that as well. Like, you know, it's also like we saw each other at, which I'm now learning, and I've mentioned it before, like the entrepreneurial blind optimism moment. So we both had these amazing, insane, grand ideas.
Yeah.
And then you kind of go into, well, some people go, I listen to Daniel Priestley quite a lot. It's like this dead land bit, which is pretty grim in entrepreneurial, where the realization of what you want to achieve, how much it's going to cost, and how hard it's going to be all kind of sets in.
Yeah.
And then obviously then you come out positive on the other side. You hit that, the bleak bit before me.
Yeah.
You know, having a business, because we are positive people. We're, sure, we can do it. We'll just do this. We'll do that. And we'll do that. And, you know, you've said yourself, you had issues with burnout. Does running your own business help burnout or prevent burnout?
I'm like, not sure if that's a serious question. No. The answer is no, it does not help with burnout. I do not. If you are prone to burnout, don't start your own business unless you are the queen of boundaries. Because I think, you know, if you're doing something that you love and it feeds into your soul, it is going to energize you. But there's only so much that you can push yourself. I mean, it took from starting the business, it took 3 years before I allowed myself weekends off. So I worked every day of the week for 3 years. Don't recommend.
It's what it, like I said, you know, I've said it many times, we are insanely positive yes people. Like, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Crack. You know, but entrepreneurialism is an interesting experience. It's not for the faint-hearted. Mm-hmm. Looking back on what my experience was, if the idea that I had wasn't so niche, I would have just worked for somebody else. Like, I would have just applied to work for you, or you, do you know what I mean? Because I'm way better as a team player than I am just a single entity on my own.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I do my own head in. You know, my... Now we're just like, I am my own worst critic, and then I'm with myself the whole time. And when you're not performing and things aren't going right, obviously, you know, I had a past relationship, and he used to describe it as like, you just get a big, big club and you're whacking yourself on the head, like that big old stick you're hitting yourself with. How's that feeling? I'm like, yeah, it's great. I'm just hitting myself with the stick all the time. Unnecessarily, but I haven't got anybody else to talk to.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
100%.
So entrepreneurial is not, it's not for anyone. I wouldn't recommend it.
I do think there's a correlation too between yachting and entrepreneurship, whereby we are conditioned that if it is not perfect, it does not go out, it does not get seen. You basically start from scratch. You know, you can't just fix something at the last minute. It's typically start again. If there's a crease in the bed, start again. That is not great in entrepreneurship, because I'm learning that done is better than perfect. But as the chronic perfectionist, that's what I say that, you know, that's kind of what I'm trying to encourage more of the team, because my whole team is ex-chief stews. But then, like, after hours is when I make it perfect, because I'm still trying to wrap my head around this idea that my idea of perfect will never be someone else's idea of perfect at the same time, right? So what I might be pushing myself for to make sure it hits within that realm of perfection for me, it's actually not going to reach that for a lot of my audience. So what on earth am I fighting myself for, you know?
The perfectionism is, you know, and it's not necessarily like I mentioned earlier in this podcast, you know, looking at my own house, you know, yachting changed me in the worst possible way. I will forever be slightly dissatisfied with my own house unless I can get my husband to earn millions, and then I will literally make a team of cleaners life a misery probably. Because they'll be like, what are you doing? It's the what we're talking about, like that team, that bringing women together. I think one of the things I like about what you've achieved with training is your passion of self-empowerment. Do you know what I mean? So we've talked about it lots, about my opinion on training when it comes to females, especially in the interior, because technically, as long as you've got two brain cells, you can learn on the job. You don't need any qualifications to work on the interior. You just need to be bright, sharp, observant. You can crack on with a good teacher. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, now having left, you know, if one is going to indulge in these courses, obviously I've been a bit hyper-focused of what value is it going to have afterwards.
For sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And we've had lots of conversations, and I've been very cynical about certain, especially some academies, that they make courses sound like it's going to be a done deal as soon as you step off. And that is not the case. And some of these courses are very, very expensive, and you would have been better off putting them in a pension or an ISA. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Value for money wise. Obviously going into the sphere of training, what was your, you know, when you started out, what was your opinion of trainers and how, what's being offered and how has it changed since you've been in this sphere?
Yeah. So, I mean, I didn't really do any training on board. And this, I think, was part of the catalyst for me wanting to do training was, up until year, I think I did like 9.5, 10 years on board. My final year, let's say year 10, I got a 5.1. Up until that point, I'd only had 38 days leave. So it's incredible now to see crew getting more leave, because I just think it's so, so important. But I had like a decade where I had to decide between a month of relaxing, you know, resting, time with family, disconnecting, or going and doing courses. Because I needed to better myself. I owed it to my team to better myself. I owed it to the captain, to the owner, to continue to show up as the best version of who I was. And I had kind of reached that capacity, I think, of what I was capable of doing. But then I felt that it was so unfair that the interior team were overlooked for raises. They were overlooked for more time off. We had a junior crew chef, I think she was, gosh, maybe 2021. Lovely. First ever boat. Didn't really have any cooking experience. I think she had worked in a cafe for a little while, but she was on the same rotation as me. And I brought this forward to the captain and just said, I just want to feel like I'm appreciated because I'm bringing in almost a decade of experience. I'm leading, you know, this team of 8 women, and I have other crew members, you know, and obviously, it's challenging because you can't compare to 2 departments. You can't compare 2 roles. Everything is so innately different. But why was I the only HOD that didn't have time for time? I, at that point, asked for 3.1. I was like, I would just like a 3.1. I don't feel like that's a lot to ask for. And I was denied. And a lot of the stews that I was speaking to at the time, a lot of the chief stews I was speaking to in kind of WhatsApp groups or on the Yacht Stew kind of platform in my messages, they were having the same issue, and a lot of them were being told, yes, but you know, this individual has had to spend X amount on courses to get to where they are. But these students were never given the option to take courses. They were never given a training budget. So you were having deckies being hired and, hey, this is your budget every year. Awesome. Go train, you know, learn, grow. But the interior, we were not given anything. And yet what blows my mind is as a team, the interior, and more specifically, really, depending on the size of vessel, but the chief stew, has more one-to-one FaceTime with the owner, with the principal, than any other crew member.
Mm.
Because we are with them all the time. And yet they are not, the hyperfixation is not on how the interior can continue to up-level their skills. It's on how do we almost keep the interior down here a little bit. That's how it felt to me.
I think that, you know, pointing that out is actually really interesting, because I think that shows how the yachting industry functions within an, it's structured like an industry that doesn't have guests.
Yes.
You understand what I mean? So it's structured, it's regulations, it's all hyper-focused on making sure the boat doesn't sink, all of that regulation, everything else, hyper-focused. But the actual job itself is hyper guest focused. It's all about the guests. It's all about what the guests want. So you're getting everybody, and I'm not trying to say that we don't need them to be trained and all of that kind of stuff, not at all. But it doesn't make any sense in some respects to not train your interior when that is where you need to be technically the strongest, because, you know, there's a few boats that go to Antarctica, but like, do you know what I mean? The cruising isn't as intense as what it would be on an oil tanker, but a lot of the regulations and everything comes from those kind of industries. It doesn't reflect our industry truly, how it's structured. I just find it really, and also, like you said, is it keeping us down or is it not really valuing what the interior do? Are you just, because you don't need, and this goes back to why when I started, because you don't need technically any qualifications to be really, really good at your job, because you can learn on the job, is that what's making everybody trip up? Because you don't. So therefore, because you can, you know, as long as you're a capable woman, you can do all of that with nobody teaching you anything. You've got to go out and be hungry and actually train yourself and develop yourself with no assistance.
Yeah.
They're just like, oh, well, it must be easy. It must be easy because you've just done it with nobody helping you. Mm-hmm. It doesn't actually mean it is easy.
No. And my goal is never to discredit any other department. Yeah. My ultimate goal is I would like for captains, for management companies to view every department as an equal importance on board. That's my ultimate goal. I don't want to throw around this flag of interior first and we should be the main priority. I would just like for it to be fair. I'm a very black and white person, and fairness is the one thing that really pushes my buttons. I don't like gray area. So it's either we look at every department as a whole and we look at the dynamic, and then you consistently, you know, you hear this rhetoric of, well, the chief stew was a bully. Okay, well, who taught her? Who taught that individual? In what environment was she nurtured? Was she taught? And where are we at now of helping her to progress, to be a better leader, to be more empathetic, to be able to signpost her team members a bit more, instead of just one in, one out, which does, I don't feel as though it happens as much anymore, but what are we doing to like nurture, foster these crew members? You're looking for longevity on crew, but what are you actually doing to promote and ensure longevity happens on board?
But also, like in a chief stew role, has anybody really defined what a chief stew is? And on, you know, different boats, it could be literally, you know, half purser. Do you know what I mean? Like nobody really, you know, it's kind of loosely defined. And don't get me wrong, there are loads of women that are fantastic chief stews. But if you've got a boat where it's not very clearly defined, they might be really good at the admin side of things, but absolutely terrible at man management. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't fit everybody. And one of the main things that's come up recently is, you know, the Pandora's box of mental health, you know, purses and chief's shoes are probably, you know, the go-tos for a lot of this stuff. They haven't got any training. They have no training. They have no training to decompress. They don't have any formal structure on any of these things. And it's like when there's emergencies, you know, when we've had a few like boating accidents and stuff like that. It's loosely built in that the chief stew is responsible for this when we have to muster and all of those kind of things. I think they're missing a massive opportunity. You could upskill those roles massively. But then also, because if you put in a bit more structure with these roles, you'll get the right people applying for them because they know what's expected. So therefore, if you're an individual and you're like, I want to progress, but that's probably, I know that I probably wouldn't be the best suited, rather than that's my only option, I'm going to just do it.
Yeah.
And then it turns into a disaster. And then the woman, you know, we've all worked for chief stews that have struggled in that position. I've actually worked with girls that have chosen to be seconds. They're fantastic seconds, but they just don't perform well as a chief. But that takes a lot of realization, and you might have that painful experience when you could have, it could have been avoided if there was a bit more guidance and a bit more structure to what is supposed to be being achieved at what level.
100%. And this is a key part of what we do collectively as a team is before these students sign up for a senior course, we have to have a call with them. And it often happens whereby the course that they're signing up is not going to serve them. It might sound, you know, like a fun, this is what I want. But after chatting with them, their career goals do not align. Or maybe they're looking to leave within the next season and they're just hoping to kind of pass the time. And that's absolutely fine. But if your long-term goal is to go into X industry, maybe we can help connect you with an individual that can actually help you get there. I think, I just think sometimes it's difficult with training, right? You want to encourage people to better themselves, to show up as the best version of themselves, to consistently learn so they can build into their team. But equally, it isn't one size fits all, especially with interior. Because as you said, every chief stew role is going to be different. The demands of you are going to be different. So I don't think every chief stew needs to take one specific course. There's just, I think it depends. What experience are you bringing into the role, right? What are you taking out of it? And for me, a huge, huge, huge part of the academy is the fact that it's online, because I'm just still so mad that so many stews have to determine between that month off or learning and bettering themselves. So that's where the online portion came in. And it's great. I do miss the in-person. So we are doing more in-person just to offer.
In-person is always more fun. Like it is, but you know, but that is obviously where the cost comes in. Yeah. And I think that's, you know, that is that compromise point that I probably struggle with now, seeing women leave the industry and how few of them ever work in hospitality. Yeah. They just don't go into it, you know, and like I said, there's a lot of reasons why that they don't, but they don't. So, you know, when you're doing courses on board, I do agree that we need to do them, but they need to be, this is why, you know, you and I have spoken for years and your approach to training, I think, is more realistic. Do you know what I mean? Like you said, you can't compromise your whole leave to go and do a 2-week course that's going to cost you thousands and will not probably be useful afterwards. I know, obviously, that's a bit cynical because all courses are useful. You can take something away from them. But price per euro, per dollar is probably, I your approach to making it a kind of affordable and fun, but also just realistic, you know? Yeah. And I do think we spoke just before we came on to the podcast about empowering women on board. Now, I think training on board is probably more crucial than ever, really, especially with a lot of the things that are going on within the industry. We've had a lot of tragedies recently, reporting, you know, all sorts of behavior to try and stop tragedies from happening, but that comes with confidence. And, you know, I've said, you know, the hypothetical before, the 45-year-old me that is here, well, 44, not 45, I went age myself, but the 28-year-old me when a 45-year-old engineer is being inappropriate or whatever to a junior stu, perhaps wouldn't go, "Oi, dickhead, knock it off." Whereas 44-year-old me would have no problem whatsoever putting said individuals back in their box. So training, I think, has got a massive place with empowering women, improving their confidence professionally, which then will radiate out to dealing with, you know, the other things that go on in the industry.
Yeah, for sure. And I think without realizing, a lot of these students come into the courses and a huge part of what they take away is how they can voice their professional opinions in a way that's going to be heard, seen, and understood, and focusing really on clear communication and also knowing what their rights are at sea. The amount of senior crew that still are just, "Well, it's just yachting." Actually, no, that's completely illegal. That shouldn't happen on board, or, you know, you're within your rights to XYZ. It's just so important. And I think knowledge is power. And if we can encourage these interior crew members to be more confident, also be more confident in their ability. We had one, she's just such a gem, one stu, and she did our chief stu CRC program. And at the end, she actually left her boat. She had been on board, this is from memory, so I could be incorrect here, but I think it was around 7.5 years, and never thought that she would be good enough to be chief stu, which breaks like my heart, because why is no one around her encouraging her that if that's what you want to do, why don't we help train you and like, let's see if it works. Anyway, she did the course, she quit, she got a new job, almost doubled her pay and doubled her leave. And I was like, that is what it's about for me. It's not about, we don't run on targets. I don't say to the team, "Hey, you need to have X amount of signups every month." I'm not, that's not innately who I am. It's not what we do. We focus on, well, who can we help this month? Whether that's just through like Zoom calls where we're literally talking through scenarios on board and mentorship calls, which we offer to a lot of our students, whether it's, "Hey, we're going to put you in touch with this person shoreside because we actually think this could be a really good fit for you." That's for me at the core of what the Academy is about. It's about that lifelong learning and empowerment and confidence building within the interior. And just letting them see how epic they are. I mean, like, these are badass men and women. We have men and women students, and like, they're amazing. They handle stress. Their transferable skills are incredible. And I do think it's a shame. The industry, I believe, is losing a lot of talent because interior team members leave and no one's seeking them out for shoreside opportunities.
It's all on the change, I'd like to think. You know, you look at what's changed since we've known each other.
Yeah.
There was only very few talking about some of the stuff that we talk about, and now there's loads. Absolutely masses. What do you, to kind of finish up on, what do you see in the future for all of this stuff? What are you predicting?
For me individually, as a company or as an industry?
Everything.
Oh boy. This is another podcast, my friend. I think for me, I am definitely living my like cottage core grandma, yeehaw meemaw is what I call it, like the country grandma life. So in the last few years, I've definitely taken a step back. I used to travel like 5 months a year to every show. I don't do that now. I try and be very, very intentional. And I spend at least half of my day every day just connecting with crew. And I love that. And I'm so grateful that I have a team that can help kind of facilitate more coursework. So I'm able to just spend more time just connecting and hopefully just providing a safe space for people to, you know, share where they're at. And I can maybe help them, I guess, career plan a bit more. So that I want to keep focusing on. We are doing a lot more in person at the end of this year, which I'm so, so excited about. Just, yeah, I think I come alive in a classroom setting. As a business, I just want to keep loving on the interior. I just want to keep giving them a voice and empowering them and providing them with the tools to be the best that they can be And that's, I mean, that's always been the goal. I think that will always remain the goal. And then as an industry, I just want the interior to be looked at with respect and understanding. And I would love to see them being appreciated more. You know, it hurts my heart truly to see the industry losing these incredible stews because they just don't feel appreciated, or they're overworked and no one's listening to them. And that sucks.
It does suck. I mean, you're talking about rotation and stuff like that. Interior is kind of the last to get it. Mm-hmm. You know, it didn't, like, the same as you when I was in, it didn't exist, interior work. And I think the whole industry is kind of realizing you can't, you know, you're not going to keep anybody by working them on those contracts, although those contracts still exist. The untapped potential of the interior is insane. You know, it could make the whole industry and take it up to an even more spectacular level. You said, if they just got backed, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it wouldn't be 6-star service, it would be 7, 8, you know. And we would have that insane. We do have obviously Yacht Crew have a great, for those that know, they know what we're capable of. But I would like to, same as you, you know, let's start tapping into this potential and being really honest about what is expected during and after, I suppose. Okay. 3 bits of advice. Somebody is just learning how to iron right now in their laundry.
Oh my gosh!
Listening to what you're saying, what's your 3 bits of advice to her right now? Learn how to iron a fitted sheet properly.
Yeah, for sure. Man, I would say, I mean, know where your personal boundaries lie, and if that means walking away from a vessel, that means walking away. I wish that more crew felt empowered to walk away from something that wasn't serving them. It feels like the end of the world, but I promise you it's not. There's so many boats out there that would welcome you on board. I would say just be conscious of your spending. You may work for billionaires, but you, my friend, are not one. So just be really aware. I think there's that typical junior crew, like the first month salary is like you go to the Apple store and buy one of everything. I was guilty of that.
I was too.
Yeah, don't.
I love buying my MacBook Air. I was like, yes.
I was like, oh,
iPhone, MacBook Air. Just strutting back to the boat with my, because back in the day, obviously the internet on board was rubbish. So you had a hard drive with loads of pirated videos.
I still have them in my desk. It's like all the movies we got from all the crew over there. I'm like, I don't know why.
Series, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And then finally, something that brought me so much joy in my last few years, and I wish I'd started at the beginning, was having my own hobbies for myself. No one else, just for me, because you give so much, you know, you tend to kind of innately fit into a bit of a mold of what the boat is looking for. You just kind of fit into what is expected of you, but like find something that you love. I worked with a deckie who was an amazing artist. Like this guy was so good. And on his time off or whatever, he would just sit outside and like draw for an hour and would come back in a different person because he just had that hour to himself. So whether it's reading, whether it's mixing music, we have people on board who had like little desk. I don't know what these things are, but like, you press buttons and music happens. It's cool. But like whatever is you, do not lose sight of who you are as an individual, because that is all, not all you have after yachting, but like that's what you'll come back to. It's the core of who you are. And I think a lot of people lose sight. I lost sight for years. I didn't know who Gemma was separate from Gemma the Yacht Stew. You know, that was a really hard transition for me. And I just wish I'd kind of remembered like, oh, I'm like, you know, that grandma that watches Gilmore Girls for like the 15,000th time and bakes pies on the weekend in gardens. Like, that's who I am.
You are a grandma. You sent me pictures of hydrangeas. Like, it's just ridiculous.
I actually got some dahlias this weekend. I need to send you photos. They're beautiful.
I do like a dahlia. They are beautiful. September flowers. They're coming the end of summer. They do come in some great colors. There you go. That's how boring we both are. It's like my roses have done really well this year. Last year they got munched to death, and I've got great roses this year.
Yeah,
a bit of a lazy love.
Just keeping track of who you are, what your boundaries are, and just give yourself some grace. Okay. Perfection is not realism.
Yeah, try to remember that. Any like crazy story? That's just finish on.
I know you asked this at the end of your podcast.
Yeah, I'm like, you're out of the day by now.
I feel like I manifested boring programs, so like my cortisol level would just chill after a lot of stress. I mean, on one of my first boats, we had this one guest, friend of the owner, who like only liked to bathe in Evian water, but then it was like room temperature because she didn't want it heated up. And I was just like, this is so strange. We would like hundreds of bottles. You can't even imagine how many bottles of Evian water.
That's a lot.
Yeah, to fill a bath of like lukewarm room temperature water, and would then cover herself in baby oil, and then you were just like a slip inside when you went to clean. And I was like, this is weird. Why have I just spent an hour emptying all these Evian bottles to put it in this marble bath to come in, and now it's like a skating rink of? And I was like, this is odd, but this is okay. Sure.
That's kind of a bit weird, because like, weren't there like, you know, it's getting like Cleopatra kind of vibes, because they used to put some kind of, I think it's like a milky type stuff into their baths, but not baby oil. That's kind of Pia Didu vibes, you know, like just why?
Oh, gross. I hadn't thought about that. No, that definitely was not what I was looking on board. Negative.
But how many liters? Like, because they only come in like 1.5, the biggest Evian bottles. Like, you just
I mean, I couldn't tell you how much we put in, but it was wild. And it's just something that stuck with me of like, that's not normal. And I think, you know, if I ever have anyone in my life that becomes super rich and famous and they start doing that, that's when you have to pull them in and go, friend, what are you doing with your life?
Budget for the water and I'll go do something useful with it.
Actually, but no, I don't know that we've done anything too hectic. I always worked on like family programs. Mainly, I mean, I worked on one charter boat. That was something. But outside of that, I loved the family private. I think it's just, easier.
You found your fit.
Yeah. Although the charter tips would have been nice, but c'est la vie.
You could always earn a bit more money. Always.
Yeah. Always.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's always a pleasure talking to you, but I'm trying to get you on the podcast for ages.
I know. I'm sorry.
The planets have aligned. Thank you very much for sharing your story with the listeners. I think they'll appreciate it. And like you said, it's an interesting topic, training.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is obviously lots of positives about it. But improving the female experience on board, I think it has to be a kind of combination of a lot of different things. And empowering women on board, again, I think it would help if the interior got more formal qualifications. You know,
I think it would absolutely help, because it is more of a level playing field. It's not up to who's trained you so much. You know, everyone was then getting expert training.
Yeah. So, I've very much enjoyed our conversation. Thank you very much for coming on.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Dear listeners, if you have enjoyed this podcast, we've got loads of others. Please check them out. Please check out Gemma's training academy as well. Like I said, I've spoken to lots of individuals, and she's one of the good ones. Her approach, I think, is most of the time pioneering, because you're not afraid to pivot. My favorite word.
Just call me Ross.
If you've enjoyed this episode, there's plenty more for you to enjoy. But until next time, take care of yourself and goodbye.